This is the Big E Sports Show
on the SportsMap Radio Network from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios.
Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
We are rolling on at SportsMap Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Alyssa Walker Campbell underway in hour two. Connect with us on Twitter at @eRadioSports. We also want to pause and recognize our newest affiliate, the Roar out of Clemson, South Carolina, 105.5. and 97.5 FM. Also, O'Reilly Auto Parts, they are here to keep your car on the road with the right parts and advice from their professional parts people and their free loaner tool program. There is no need to purchase a tool if you're only going to use it once. Your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store has more than 80 specialty tools available to rent for your next repair. Refundable deposit is required at the time of rental. Check them out, O'ReillyAuto.com. Better prices, better parts every day. O'Reilly Auto. Good to continue the NFL conversation. Jack McCrod, jump on in here. Let's talk about the Cleveland Browns. What is going on with the quarterback situation? Is Baker the long-term deal for the Browns?
I don't really think the Browns have a better choice, if I'm honest with you. Like, you can try to get somebody out of college, let's say a Kenny Pickett or a Matt Corral or someone along those lines, but the Browns won't have a high enough pick to get one of the top-end quarterbacks in this draft. If I'm Cleveland, I mean, who do you want to? Do you want to go to the free agent market? Do you want to get a Ryan Fitzpatrick, a Tyrod Taylor? I mean, Baker Mayfield is better than, you know, picking up a guy off the street or drafting a quarterback in college that you don't know has anything value. So the Browns are kind of stuck right now. I've never been a big Baker Mayfield guy. I think he's just Johnny Manziel with his head on straight. So I don't know. I would say that I think that they should, but at the same time, there just doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of better options in Baker Mayfield right now for the Browns.
Well, a lot of questions about if Baker Mayfield is the long-term answer for the Browns. I mean, do you think that they can still make the playoffs? I mean, are those playoff hopes, it seems like they're kind of dwindling away.
They're 5-5 right now, and injuries have hit this team hard.
Right.
With their top two running backs in Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt both being out for seemingly a few more weeks. Even they had injuries to their receiving core with Jarvis Landry and Peoples-Jones, who, you know, are always questionable week after week. Baker Mayfield himself is dealing with an injury, and Case Keenum even had to play a few weeks ago against the Broncos. I think that there's just too much to overcome. So if I had to make a prediction, I'd say no, the Browns don't make the playoffs this year.
The NFL conversation continues after this quick break. Come on back to SportsMap Radio Network.
Is the Big E Sports Show on the SportsMap Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Okay, we are back on this Saturday morning. SportsMap Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell. Thank you so much for carving out time and joining us. It is truly another big weekend in sports as we look forward to week 12 in the college football season. So many compelling matchups today. And right now we're going to turn our attention to the Big 12 Conference and preview Oklahoma and Iowa State. The Cyclones are in Norman this morning. And joining us from Compass Media, who's going to be providing the call, that is the former voice of the Atlanta Falcons and the Carolina Panthers, the great Bill Rozinski. Good morning, Bill.
Alyssa, always fun to be with you. How are you?
I am doing great. Always excited about game day. And how about Oklahoma and Iowa State? These teams are coming off bad losses from 1 week ago. So let's start with the Sooners first. As they look back to bounce back from their first loss of the seasons, can they rebound?
Well, certainly they can. They're playing at home. The crowd's always a factor there. And I think they were embarrassed by the way they played, especially offensively at Baylor last week. That was, I think that was an eye-opener for Lincoln Riley in that offense. I think for the first time this season, Caleb Williams, the freshman quarterback, didn't play all that well. In fact, he got benched for Spencer Rattler for a while, came in late in the game, and got him on the scoreboard late. But he was off the mark. He was missing receivers. He was, he had some bad reads. He just didn't play well. And the running game, they were shut down there. So I think, big picture, they're going to come out against a pretty stout Iowa State defense. And it's going to be tough for them today. But, they're at home. anytime you're embarrassed like the way they were last week at Baylor, I think Lincoln Riley's going to have something up his sleeve to get the offense going.
Does Oklahoma have a quarterback controversy? Because there's been a lot of talk about, you know, benching a preseason Heisman candidate in Spencer Rattler a month into the season and then being replaced with Caleb Williams.
Oh, probably to some extent, mm-hmm. but, you know, Caleb has shown, you know, he's got that little it factor. You know, he makes some plays yeah. that we haven't seen from Spencer Rattler. I'm not knocking Rattler, but, you know, I think big picture, this is Caleb Williams' team from now on. I wouldn't be surprised to see Rattler in the transfer portal at some point in the off season, but you never know. An injury could happen. But right now, I think this is Caleb Williams' team. And, you know, they got two big games. They got this one. They got Oklahoma State. They still have a chance to get in the Big 12 championship game. I don't think they can make the playoff. Maybe they can, but they need to have some other good things happen. But it starts with winning this game this afternoon.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions. I mean, does Oklahoma still have hope for a spot in the college football playoff? But let's talk about, I mean, are they still your favorite to win the Big 12 Conference?
Well, you know, Oklahoma State's really playing well. And Iowa State beat Oklahoma State earlier this season.
Right.
So, but they seem to be really getting it together. And it'll come down to Bedlam. You know, we'll find out. And that's always one of those games where, you know, they say throw out the records. And I think I did. I did Bedlam last year, and they didn't play all that great, Oklahoma State. But, I'm kind of leaning Oklahoma State right now. But, you know, we'll see. There's a lot of football to be played, and then you got to get to the championship game. And, you know, I was looking at the numbers, and even Iowa State mathematically still has a chance to get to the Big 12 championship game. They would have to win this afternoon.
So what do we need to know about the Cyclones? I mean, and what is the reason, Bill, would you say, for their four losses this season?
Wow. Well, when you get beat by a 62-yard field goal, that's one way to lose.
Yeah.
That's one way to lose the game.
Right.
I think defensively their numbers are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're giving up 20 points a game. I'm looking at total yardage here. They're second in the conference, 10th in the country, 306 yards a game. I'm not sure. You know, they got sloppy early. They had turnovers early. You know, they lose to Iowa by 10 points. They're in every game, Alyssa. I saw a stat where since 2017 – they've only been beaten in two games by more than 14 points. Now, just think about that and the competition that they have with the Big 12 and the other games that they play. So we're talking the last 4 years. So I think that says a lot about Matt Campbell, their head coach. And they have a lot of really good players, but do they have great players? They've got a couple. Purdy's a good quarterback. Hall's a good running back. They've got some good defensive players. In fact, you know, coming into this season, they had the offensive and defensive players of the year from last year in the Big 12. So, you know, there's a lot of talent there. I can't think of any one thing. It's just like they fell behind Texas Tech by a bunch and had to rally and win the game. They lost to Iowa because they turned the ball over a bunch of times. I don't think there's any one thing, but I do think they'll show up in this game against Oklahoma this afternoon. This is no pushover. These guys, they know that pretty much their hopes disappeared last week with a chance to get to the Big 12 championship game. So this is going to be a fight today. It's going to be a fist fight.
Big 12 conference play, always competitive, and it is survival of the fittest. We are joined by from Compass Media, and that is Bill Rozinski. And I mentioned in the open, you're the former voice of the Atlanta Falcons and the Carolina Panthers. And we want you to weigh in on the return of Cam Newton back to his former team that drafted him number one overall in 2011. So, Bill, what kind of juice does he bring to the club?
Well, if you live in Charlotte like I do, they just punched their ticket to the Super Bowl, according to most of the fans.
Oh, okay.
They're delirious. And I think what it showed was they have no plan. And I'm talking about the organization. Because they signed Teddy Bridgewater last year, let him go. They're still paying some of his contract. They, bring in Sam Darnold from the Jets. And paying him a lot of money, and they owe him a lot of money next year. And now you got Newton in here. I think this was a And Darnold's hurt, and he hasn't played well the last few weeks. So I think this was an organization kind of desperate to maybe save the season. Newton was sitting out there. There's a reason Cam Newton wasn't signed by anybody. I mean, he's got to deal with the ego and with some of his, I don't know, tendencies. He's kind of a strange guy, but he is a good player, and they got him involved last week. You know, he threw a touchdown pass, ran for a touchdown. We'll see how it goes. They've got Washington at home on Sunday. That place is going to be rocking because there's a lot of Washington fans who still live in the Charlotte area because that's who they watched on TV before the Panthers ever were born. So and Rivera's coming back, of course, the longtime Panther coach. So this will be a fun game on Sunday to watch because Newton's expected to start. How this plays out long-term, I have no idea. But I think to answer your question, the organization was desperate for a spark, so they went back to Cam.
Well, it's going to be fascinating to watch that game on Sunday and see how this all plays out. Joining us at SportsMap Radio Network is the great Bill Rozinski. Bill, we listen to you often on PGA Tour Radio. Of course, you were just in our neck of the woods. You were in Houston last week. And so give us your impressions of Memorial Park. I understand that course played tough.
It did. It was interesting because, you know, it's a public golf course. I think the only other public course the tour plays on a regular basis. Second or third year they've used Memorial, and you look at the yardage and it's not that long a golf course, but those greens are tough. And the big issue that the pros had last week, Alyssa, was because there's no overseed, it's Bermuda,
right?
So the Bermuda's starting to, you know, go into hibernation for the winter, and especially around the greens they found it really difficult to figure out how to hit chip shots and work. I saw Mark Leishman was using a 5-iron to chip shots from around the green. Other players were using their putter a lot because they were just not sure. And the greens were undulating. They didn't have big slopes, but they were subtle. And the tour put them in these hole locations. Scotty Scheffler told me after his round on Saturday that the hole locations were pretty nasty. So that's why you saw low scores. The reason you saw low scores the first 2 days is because they had a lot of rain and they were able to lift clean in place the first 2 days. When you give anybody that opportunity, that's why the lead was 10 under after 2 days. And then all of a sudden, 10 under wins the golf tournament because that's how tough that golf course was on Saturday and Sunday. I liked it. I think the players in general like it, although they were scratching their heads about what to do around the greens.
Yeah, it's a demanding course, no doubt about it. But Scotty Scheffler, you mentioned him. He somehow figured some things out and posted a 62 and what finished tied for second at the 2021 Houston Open. He certainly was impressive. What did he share with you, Bill?
He's still looking for that first win.
That's right.
Which is interesting because he's played so well. You look at his track record in the majors last year, and he was pretty much top 10 in all of them. Ryder Cup experience. You know, he went out and stared down John Rahm. Now, a lot of guys can't do that. And he's due. I like his game. His putting isn't the greatest. If he could clean that up a little bit, I think he would be a better player. He struggled around the greens the last couple of days, especially on Sunday. You know, he had a chance to birdie the ninth hole 6 feet away, which would have gotten him to 10 under making the turn on Sunday, and he parted, and then he went bogey on 10 and 11. So I think this kid, he's a likable guy, he's a decent interview, and his dad loves listening to PGA Tour Radio, so we see his dad out there a lot.
Yeah.
He's a cool guy.
Uh-huh.
So his time will come. You know, I think he's a top 10 player right now on the tour, and one of these days he's going to get his first win and then maybe many more.
Always a lot of fun to listen to Bill Rozinski on PGA Tour Radio. You can listen to him this morning on the call for the Oklahoma Sooners Iowa State Cyclones. He is in Norman, Oklahoma. Bill, thank you so much for taking some time. I know it's a busy morning. Appreciate you.
Hey, Alyssa, anytime. Thank you, and happy Thanksgiving. Hope you and your family and tell your son to keep hitting them straight.
There you go. Much more coming your way at SportsMap Radio Network. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the SportsMap Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, we are back. Hour two, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. So glad you are with us on this Saturday. Many different ways to connect. You can always reach us live on Twitter at eRadio Sports, info at eradiosports.com, podcastarena.com. It is hard to believe Thanksgiving is just around the corner, and we want you to be ready for road trips. So before your travel begins, visit O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simple preventative maintenance before you go will ensure a safe journey. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. We have hit it hard. Hour one, talking college football and NFL. The conversation will continue a little bit later in the hour, but right now we're excited to shift our attention and focus to the hardwood and talk some college basketball. The senior writer from The Athletic, Dana O'Neill, has just released her new book. It is titled The Big East, Inside the Most Entertaining and Influential Conference in College Basketball History. And we are thrilled to have her on our show and network for the first time. Good morning, Dana.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, well, before we take a deep dive into your book, we always love to talk some college basketball. The season is finally underway. Just kind of give us your pulse, some of your early impressions from the 2021-22 season.
Yeah, you know, I think it's been a real treat already. We've had some really delightfully well-played games for early in the season. I was up at the Champions Classic in New York last week for the Kentucky and Duke and Michigan State Kansas games, and then, you know, I watched the Villanova UCLA game. I saw bits and pieces of Seton Hall's game against Michigan, and they're just really high end for earlier in the season. And, you know, after last year where we couldn't watch too much live, it's just a treat to see any basketball.
Yeah,
but to see such really, really, I just think, real well executed plays and teams out there, it's been delightful, frankly.
Well, there are so many storylines coming into this season, but right at the top, of course, preseason number one is Gonzaga. What do you think, Dana? I mean, is this the year that they finally win that national title and get that championship?
I keep predicting them to win, and I keep
you do. Okay.
One year I'll have to be right.
Yeah.
So, you know, here's the thing. I think they're really young. I was out there for practice back in October, and I was struck at, you know, they're kind of Gonzaga young. I mean, they've got some older players in Andrew Nembhard and Rozier Bolton, but they're both transfers. So they're young, which the bad news is that they might have a bit of a rough patch here and there. But the good news is, unlike last year's team, I think the upside for this team is the ceiling. You know, and, of course, they're anchored by the arguably the player of the year in Drew Timmy. So they're going to be a force, certainly. We'll see more, I guess, next week. They've got, you know, they've got Duke and they've got UCLA in the span of 3 days. So that'll be a real tell, I think, on how good Gonzaga is, at least early.
You are listening to the voice. That is Dana O'Neill, senior writer with The Athletic. Check her work out online. Very good. Author of her new book. It is titled The Big East, Inside the Most Entertaining and Influential Conference in College Basketball History. We are excited to take a deep dive here in just a moment. But you know what, Dana? We're here in Houston. We're kind of like in the Big 12 conference area. So give us your pulse on, I mean, the defending national champion in the Baylor Bears. Do they have enough to compete for another championship?
Yeah, and I think it's probably, they lost so much. I mean, that was such a ridiculously good team last year. And I think people forgot about them when they had their COVID pause. They lost an awful lot, I think, to say, you know, to get them right back into the mix of a national championship is probably a tall order. But look, I mean, they've got enough guys back. Scott Drew has been around the bend a few times. I would say that they are, you know, in the thick of things in the Big 12. Certainly, you know, Kansas is probably right now a couple steps ahead of them just because Kansas is so deep. But I would never count out Scott Drew. He has mastered the art of making teams better by March and always competing once it gets into that NCAA tournament.
We talk about Baylor. You mentioned just briefly Kansas, but what about Texas? Because I think they're going to be in the hunt with their new head coach. Chris Beard's got a loaded roster, and he really did utilize that transfer portal.
He really did. I mean, and they're old. I mean, they're really, really old. And I'm a believer in old teams win national championships or compete in March because they know how to handle a thing or two. You know, I think in the game against Gonzaga last week, they looked a little exposed, but that's because even though they're old, there's a lot of new parts new to each other, right? They haven't figured out how to play together entirely yet, and I think that was part of what you saw in that game. But I suspect Texas will be right there along, you know, along the run for the season. I don't see them falling off, and Chris Beard is a terrific coach. He will manage that team quite well.
Yeah, Coach Beard, he utilized the transfer portal, added six of the top 30 transfers in the country. And I just have to wonder, too, Dana, is this going to be a new trend? Is this a good thing? I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a new trend. I mean, everyone's going to go that route because players are just going to, you know, pivot and leave if they can with the one-time transfer allowability now. Do I think it's good? I think it's good and bad. I always think players should have choices. I mean, the rest of the world does. Why shouldn't they have choices? I do think it's going to make things a little messy, you know, just for continuity. I think adding a bunch of I thought Mike Krzyzewski and a couple other coaches had really interesting looks at the transfer portal. Like, when you add a bunch of new players, just because they're old, they're still new to you. They're still new to your system. Bill Self was talking about this too. Like, they still don't know how you play and how to play with your guys. So it's going to take some time. And I think just adding a bunch of transfers all the time isn't the solution to winning. I think you have to come, like anything else, you get good freshmen, you get guys that stick around, and a couple of transfers, then you're on to something.
She is the senior writer with The Athletic, Dana O'Neill. Check her work out online. Also the author of her brand new book. And that's where we're going to focus our attention right now. Go out and get a copy. It is available anywhere online. It is titled The Big East, Inside the Most Entertaining and Influential Conference in College Basketball History. And so, kind of talk about, as far as the inspiration of this book, is this something that you had wanted to do for quite some time, Dana?
I would love to say I was smart enough to think that way, but actually, a book agent reached out to me after I had written a story on The Athletic about the crazy rivalries and asked if I was interested. The only reason it never occurred to me was because I presumed someone had already written a book about the Big East because it was just so legendary, and I was frankly stunned to find out that they hadn't. So once I realized that, I was like, yeah, sign me up, because the personalities and the games and the energy of that league was so unbelievable, especially in its heydays of the early 80s, that I knew there would be great stories to tell and no shortage of them. So once I was given the opportunity, I was all in. I mean, I grew up in the Northeast. I was a Big East fan. I covered it as a reporter, so it wasn't like it was unfamiliar to me at all.
An iconic league. We certainly remember those days well. So how did this unlikely group of schools come to dominate college basketball so quickly?
Yeah, I think the league itself is the baby of one man, and that's Dave Gavitt. If Dave Gavitt didn't push everyone else in the direction of combining forces, it wouldn't have happened, at least not as quickly as it did. He saw something that nobody else did in terms of aligning their allegiances as a conference. So that was the first step. But they got lucky, and I don't mean that like to discredit what the league was, but they got lucky in terms of timing. They came to be born just as Chris Mullin, Pearl Washington, Patrick Ewing are all getting out of high school, right? And they're all these, you know, these guys from the Northeast who suddenly have a chance to play in the Northeast. So it worked out perfectly. And then the partnership with ESPN was huge. You know, putting those games on television, getting Big Monday, giving them that platform where everybody saw Big East games and knew what it was from the jump. It made it so much more appealing to players across the country.
So you talk about and highlight the Big East's first conference commissioner. Who else did you interview in the book? I understand, what, 60 key figures?
Yeah. Yeah, quite a few.
You've been busy, Dana.
Yeah, I was busy for sure. Yeah, I was blessed to be able to talk to John Thompson Jr. before he passed, thank goodness, because I don't think you can write a Big East book without that. I sat down with Lou Carnesecca, the St. John's coach, for hours. You know, all of the coaches, Jim Calhoun, Jim Boeheim, Jay Wright, Rick Pitino, P.J. Carlissimo, a lot of the great players, you know, Chris Mullin, Patrick Ewing, Louis Orr, Roosevelt Bowie, you know, everyone you can think of that I could try to get a hold of. So, but then I tried to like dig into the people that you don't know about that were behind the scenes a little bit. You know, one of the earliest secretaries of the league who kind of knew how, you know, mom and pop it was to start, and the guy who played the Dome Ranger, which is sort of like this two-bit mascot that Syracuse had for years. So, you know, all of those people added to the flavor that made the league so special.
What did you share about the legendary coach in John Thompson?
I'm sorry?
What did you share about the legendary coach John Thompson?
Well, I mean, I am privileged to have known John for quite some time. You know, he's such a unique person in so many ways, and his influence in the sport is just enormous. I think what I found was so compelling about in this particular project was his dedication to the league. I don't think people appreciated how willing he was to put the league ahead of himself sometimes, or at least defend the league, and that was so critical, because his voice, literally, because he had that big booming voice, was louder than anybody else's, but also figuratively, you know, he carried a big stick and people listened to him.
She is the senior writer of The Athletic. Go out and get a copy of her brand new book. It is titled The Big East, Inside the Most Entertaining and Influential Conference in College Basketball History. And the holidays are here, the perfect stocking stuffer. Dana, we appreciate you carving out some time. Thank you so much for connecting with us.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way in Hour 2 at Sports Map Radio Network. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the SportsMap Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
We are so glad you're with us on this Saturday morning. SportsMap Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Hello. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell. Always love to reach out and connect with our audience. Coming to you from Houston, Texas. We are live on Twitter at eRadio Sports Info, at eRadioSports.com, PodcastArena.com. It is hard to believe next week is Thanksgiving. We want you to be prepared for road trips. So before your travel begins, visit O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simple preventative maintenance before you go will ensure a safe journey. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. We always deliver the biggest and the best in sports, and we're ready to talk some PGA news and notes. In our next segment, who joins us each and every week? That is former PGA pro, the great Larry Miller. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, everybody, and hope you had a good week and ready to talk some golf today.
Always ready to talk some golf, and of course the RSM Classic. It is underway, and it is the final PGA Tour event of the year before the fall schedule as it comes to a close. So, who you got this weekend? Who are you keeping your eye on, Larry?
Well, you know, it's a tournament where you don't see the big names, a lot of the big names. You know, it's in fact, you can go down the list and take a look, and I guarantee you, half the names you've probably never heard of, and it's one of those events where a lot of times you'll see a first-time winner because, you know, you don't have a lot of the elite players out there. But there's a couple of guys that you know, I've been watching steadily, and one of them I know personally, Michael Thompson, because when I was living in Birmingham, he was kind of his home course was Shoal Creek, and they kind of gave him an honorary membership and let him practice and play there. So I got to, you know, observe him a lot there, and he's had a steady career that's been improving steadily, just little bit by bit, you know, and putting has been his nemesis, but he's getting better at that. He's had some really good finishes. He's one guy that I think is really overdue, you know, to get in the winner's circle. And another one that is just like that, but has really had more good finishes this year than even Michael has, and that's Johnny Vegas, Jonathan Vegas,
yeah.
Calling Johnny Vegas, and he's been knocking at the door. But, you know, it's one of those tournaments where there's a jillion of these young guys coming up out of the Corn Ferry Tour and out of college, and they're ready to win. And it's just, I mean, you could almost throw a dart, you know, at a name in one of these events because you don't have, you know, the top 10 in the world playing in the thing and where it's more predictable who's going to be up there. But those two guys, Michael Thompson, Johnny Vegas, I think are both due, and I wouldn't be surprised if one or both has a pretty good week.
Well, one particular player I want to highlight, his game has been trending in the right direction, and that is Scottie Scheffler. How about last week in the second round, set a course record, 62 of the Houston Open, and you know, just had a fourth-place finish at the Mayakoba. What do you appreciate about his game the most? What do you see, Larry?
He's a Sam Burns-type player. Those guys are very, very – it's like mirror images. They're big. They're strong. They hit it a long way. You know, they have good touches around the greens. And I think you can take those two names, in fact, Sam Burns, Scottie Scheffler. I think you can throw those in the pot for the next 10 years, and they're going to be in that elite category – that we're putting players like McIlroy and DJ and Justin Thomas into right now. I think that's kind of the part of the future of the top players in the world. Those two guys, they've got all the tools. You know, it's Scottie Scheffler. And like I said, they're both big and strong, but they have good touches too. You know, it's one thing to be able to hit it out there 320, 330, but you got to have those deft touches on those pitches and those chips and especially on the putting green. But they have that, those guys. But, yeah, Scottie Scheffler is another name that, he could win at any time because it's just a matter of making a few putts. You know, he's going to have so many birdie chances.
Well, and Scottie, he's a Texas guy. He knows how to play in the wind. Yeah. That's very important, right?
It is, very much so, especially in the fall when you get these fronts coming through.
Yep.
And it's often more windy And not only that, the ball does not go as far in the cooler, drier temperatures. And so the guys that hit it a long way and are used to playing in the wind, like Scottie Scheffler is, even more so than Sam Burns. You have to look for those guys to perform really well this time of year.
You are listening to the familiar voice. That is Larry Miller, former PGA Pro author, LarryMillerGolf.com. Check out all the wonderful stuff on his website. And the RSM, as we've been highlighting, it is underway, and the RSM Classic receives, the winner will receive 500 FedEx Cup points. And what can you tell us about the Sea Island Resort as far as this course, the Seaside course? It's a Tom Fazio design.
Yes, I've been there, played that golf course. It can get really windy there. This time of year, a lot of it is pretty exposed, and the wind can really be biting. It goes right through you. It's very deceiving there. You know, you don't perceive that part of the country is being cold, but I guarantee you, I've been there when I felt like I was in upper Minnesota.
Wow.
I mean, it can go right through you. But it's a beautiful place, Fazio Design. He's one of my favorite designers. He is famous for difficult greens. He can really get you on the greens. A lot of his greens are very large, and you can hardly find a flat spot on them. And you could have a 30-footer that breaks three ways at least. I mean, it's really hard to read his greens. And that's one of the features of his golf courses, along with just great design. There's a course, one of my favorites is up in Oregon. It's in Bend, Oregon,
mm-hmm.
Redmond, Bend area, and it's called Pronghorn. And there are two courses there, and one is a Jack Nicklaus design, and the other is a Fazio. And the Fazio course, to me, it's in my top five golf courses in the world. It is a fabulous golf course called Pronghorn, and that's my favorite Fazio design. Another one down in the panhandle of Florida is Camp Creek near Seaside, Florida. That's a Fazio design, and that thing has monstrous greens mm-hmm. with no flat spots. So you better bring your good putting stroke when you play his greens.
So what is the philosophy of a Tom Fazio golf design? I mean, you've talked a lot about as far as the greens.
Well, he likes fairway bunkers, and he likes big greens that are undulating, and they have, a lot of them have little, sort of little fingers on one side or the other that they can stick the pin in, and you know, you're standing back in the fairway, and you wonder if the pin's on the green or not, because you're looking at this green, and then you see the pin looks like it's off the green, but when you get up there, there's a little finger that goes out to the side, one side or the other, sometimes in the back, And he likes to put the pins near those areas, and really hard to get to. You have to be able to work the ball and shape your shots on a Fazio course, more so than some other designers where it's just, you know, kill it out there and wedge it up. You know, you have to really think on Fazio's designs.
One of the hot topics right now, and we've mentioned it many times on the show, is, you know, increased distance and technology. I mean, should golf course designers, as we talk about Tom Fazio, I mean, evolve and adapt? I mean, what is the future of golf courses going forward? Are golf courses perhaps, you know, are they getting too short?
Yeah, a lot of them are, and a lot of them don't have the real estate to lengthen. And one example is Preston Trail in Dallas, where the Byron Nelson used to be played. I played in it there two years in a row, and they ran out. You know, the course got too short for the tour players, and so they had no way to lengthen it whatsoever. It's in the middle of Preston Trail neighborhood, gated neighborhood, houses right up against the holes, and so there's nowhere to go. So they had to move the tournament, and that's happening. That's happened in a lot of spots. And it's going to happen even more so now that they're hitting it longer and longer. So, you know, that's one of my reasons for, you know, lobbying for shortening the allowable distance that a ball can travel, because so many great golf courses in our country are going to become obsolete. We talked about that once before.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's they have to do something. I sure hate to see all the great courses, you know, have to not have a golf tournament because it's too short. So, let's hope something gets done with that. And the designers, or I think the new courses they're designing, you know, they're designing those courses with these extra back tees that the public hardly ever even sees, but that's where they can play from if they have to, you know, to make it 7,700 yards.
Well, then I was going to ask you, I mean, golf course design, how much has that changed over the past, let's say, 20 to 25 years?
Well, yeah, in several ways it's changed. It's changed in dimension, of course. The courses are bigger. bigger golf courses, longer. But they've also made great innovations and strides with the technology of the maintenance of a golf course, so that if you notice, if you watch it on television or go to an event yourself, these players are playing on perfect greens. You know, they are, I mean, they are manicured so perfectly, it's almost like artificial turf. And if you get the ball rolling online, if you read it right, it's going to go in. It's not going to hit any irregularities in the green or little bad spots, because they're perfect surfaces. And that's the way the pros demand it. And so, they've learned how to manicure golf courses much more immaculately than before. If you watch the old films from the 50s and 60s, mm-hmm. and you see the guys putting, like Arnold Palmer and Billy Casper, they just bang the putts and almost snap it with their wrist, because the greens were, if the step meter was probably six or seven, they were so thick and so slow. And now it's just the opposite. You get 12 and 13 on the step meter now, and it's like putting on your kitchen floor.
Former PGA pro, the great Larry Miller, is with us each and every week at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. And Larry, you are 74 years young. So what course is still on your bucket list? Where's somewhere that, you want to play?
Well, I've played pretty much everywhere in the States. There's a few places I haven't played I'd like to. Like, I have not played San Francisco Golf Club. I have not played... what's the one? Shinnecock up in New York. Yeah. I haven't played that one. As far as the United States go, now I've been to Scotland and played all over Scotland twice, but I have not been to Ireland, and that's on the bucket list for sure. Now, if you take a look, you could Google golf courses in New Zealand, and I'm telling you, if you look at it, you're going to want to go, because it is just spectacular. But problem with that is so far away. It's an odyssey to try to get there. But I sure would like someday to get there and play some of those golf courses, just because they're so spectacularly beautiful. And then a few here that I haven't played, and also Ireland. So, give me another 20 years, and, if I could, I might be swinging from a wheelchair, but I'll be swinging.
Uh-huh. We have highlighted this morning so many of Tom Fazio's, his designs. But one course that you've got to get out there with, Connie, is Greyhawk Golf Club. And that, of course, is going to continue to serve as the men and women's for the Golf National Championship in 2022 and 2023. You got to get out there.
We have played Greyhawk.
You have? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've been out there twice. We used to go to Scottsdale every year for a while, So we played Greyhawk and Aiden, Phil's Grill, Mickelson's Grill in there. Beautiful place. And I love that golf out there. I love desert golf. That type target golf. And but Greyhawk, Greyhawk has some trees too. So it's really a great golf course, and that's a great trip to go out there, and so many places you can stay and so many great courses out there that are, and like I said, very well manicured and just beautiful. That's a great golf destination.
Our PGA News and Notes continues with Larry Miller after this quick timeout.
This is the Big E Sports Show on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour 2, Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. Let's go back inside the ropes with former PGA pro Larry Miller. Okay, we're going to shift gears here quickly. The countdown is on for the match between Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau. Coverage will begin November 26th at 4 o'clock Eastern time. So do you feel the same about Brooks Koepka and Bryson as far as this rivalry? Because doesn't it kind of seem like they kissed and made up after the Ryder Cup?
Yeah, I think they did. I don't think they ever hated each other. I just think a lot of it was for show business. Now they may have a little personality clash, but I don't think there was any malice from either side. But I think it was good. It was good for the game anyway to see them get along and then kind of make up, as you said, at the end of that. I think it's good for the game. I think it's in the spirit of the game of golf. The spirit of golf is not one of an adversarial relationship. Mm-hmm. In fact, you see players almost pulling for other players' putts to go in. I mean, it's one of those things, you know, where, you know, let's play golf, and if you beat me and play better than me, then I'm going to shake your hand and congratulate you. You beat me. There's no vitriol in that. So I was glad to see that for sure. In this upcoming match, I think it's going to be fun. I think you're going to see a lot of joking around, a lot of camaraderie, and I call it, like, you know, worldwide wrestling. You know, the WWW. it's all for show business, of course, but it's fun because you get to see Bryson smash the ball, and Brooks probably going to try to keep up with him. You know, and it's two bombers for sure. So you're going to see some long drives, but I think it'll be fun.
Will you watch?
No. No, I don't watch those sort of things.
Come on, Ill Dog.
I like to watch the serious golf.
There you go. Hey, well, listen, you and Connie have a wonderful Thanksgiving. We are up against the clock, and we look forward to our conversation a little bit later. Thank you.
Yep. Yeah. Great Thanksgiving for everyone out there, and I'll talk to you soon.
That, of course, was Larry Miller, who joins us each and every week at Sports Map Radio Network, the Big E Sports Show. A big thank you to all of our guests and our lineup. We always love to hear from our audience. You can join us online at Twitter, at @eRadioSports. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show. So long, everybody. Don't drink and drive.